You can turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 40. We're going to continue our study of the book of Joseph. And we're going to come to a very pivotal moment in Joseph's life today. Some would say it's the most important moment of Joseph's life. And it's also been said throughout history that with great power comes great responsibility. I think that was some guy in Batman, but I think he quoted someone else too. So Spider-Man 2, I think that was quote. I mean, it's all like superhero movies, right? It was definitely a superhero movie. But it's true. with great power does come responsibility, but it could equally be said that with great power comes the potential for great danger. You know, our world loves power, it loves influence, loves wealth, but people assume that with all those things, life is easy. And with great power, there is oftentimes great danger at hand. I think of, probably for me, one of the athletes I followed the most growing up was this guy named Tiger Woods, and he's the greatest golfer that ever lived. He was going to have more Masters more major championships than Jack Nicklaus. And then he became he was the best golfer in the world, fame, fortune, everything. And then he has ruined his life, not once actually, but twice. He's kind of like the stock market. He goes up and he crashes, and he was going up again and he crashed again. I think of military leaders like George Armstrong Custer. He was a renowned military leader in the Civil War. But infamously, he's most remembered for his greatest failure at the Battle of Little Bighorn, which people call Custer's last stand. He went from having great power and authority to, he died in that battle. I think of countless young people, some your age, when they started, and who wanted fame. They wanted the world to know who they were. They had these great ideas, and they became famous, whether it was on YouTube or TikTok. They were just regular kids like y'all. And then they destroyed their lives with the wealth and the fame that came through that, through drugs, crime, scandal, or ultimately involvement in pornography. That power became their downfall. And in the Bible, we see countless examples. We just studied 1 and 2 Samuel. I think of Saul, who was a regular guy, and then he became king of the nation. And that power went to his head. And that power, prestige, and his inflated ego led him to disobey God, to steal, and led him to violence and attempted murder. And Joseph is about to be put in the very same, potentially very similarly dangerous circumstance, because this young Hebrew man from Canaan, who was left for dead, almost, by his family, traded in the slave trade, sent to Egypt, and has been in rising places of power and prominence. Now he sits in jail, but he is going to become the second most powerful person in the entire world. The second most powerful person in the entire world. And this, people praise it as Joseph. It's the pinnacle of his life, but it could be the moment of his greatest disaster. So just as a quick recap for you, if this is the first time you've ever studied the book of Joseph or the story's new to you, Joseph was the favorite child of Jacob, who's now Israel, one of the descendants of Abraham, of the promised line that which the Messiah will come. And Joseph, though he was the favorite child, which is not great if you have 11 brothers, he apparently also lacked the discretion on how to communicate with them. So they really didn't like him. And he had this dream, and then he had another dream, and so he told everyone about it. And the dream, if you forgot, was that his brothers and his mom and dad would bow down before him, and they would serve him. And that didn't make his brothers very happy. So it got them so angry that they got to the point where they conspired to murder him. But he was saved at the last moment, where one of the other brothers was like, "Hey, maybe we shouldn't kill this guy. Maybe let's not do that." So they threw him in a pit, and then they were like, "Oh, here's some slave traders. Well, we can actually get some money for our annoying brother and send him away." So they traded Joseph for some silver coins, and so he goes away, and he's put in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar's the captain of the guard, And Joseph has some great skills in addition to dreaming and having and to being part of God's chosen nation. Joseph has good managerial skills. So Potiphar raises him to run his home. He's not just a slave. He's in charge. But he runs into Potiphar's wife, who's immoral and sees Joseph, and she wants to be immoral with him. But Joseph is faithful, and he obeys God. He does not sin, and he says, no, like, this is not right, and he runs away. And so she, in revenge to him, lies about him. And so that sends him from Potiphar's house to the jail. And that obedience from God sends him to prison. And so that's where we find Joseph today. He's faithfully served in the circumstances that God has placed him in. He hasn't always done it the right way. He hasn't always said the right thing. He's learning, but he's been faithful to God. He trusts the Lord. And so now, you would think that danger has passed him, but now he's about to be placed in the most dangerous circumstance he's been to yet. And it is not actually the prison. It is going to be what comes afterwards. So if you are writing a title down for this lesson, you could write down Danger Ahead. Your title is Danger Ahead, From the Pit to the Palace. And before we dive into our lesson, let's ask God to bless our study, and then we will see what his word has for us. Lord God, thank you for our nation as we celebrate 250 years. Thank you for the nation of Israel that you established through the promise, first through the promise in Genesis chapter 3, but then through Abraham and Isaac and then Jacob. And we are so grateful for that nation, for it is the nation through whom our Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ, came. And we are grateful that he came and lived on this earth to die for sinners like us. Now may you bless the study of your word today, that we may learn to be obedient and faithful and kind, and that we may be more like Jesus for his glory. Amen. So, danger ahead, from the pit to the palace. And we're going to see this kind of happen in two movements. And first, we're going to start out with Joseph's divine interpretations. Joseph's divine interpretations. And it's going to start out with dreams in the pit. And we find that in chapter 40 of Genesis. I hope you're there already. And Genesis chapter 40 begins and says thus, "Then it came about, after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was in prison. And the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time." Okay, so the lead up to these dreams that happened in the pit, one would expect the dangerous circumstances we're going to talk about to happen in this jail where Potiphar confined him. But because prisoners aren't great, right? No one's excited to go to jail and to make friends, right? If you go to jail, you're like hoping to survive. And the chief jailer was surprised by this young man who wasn't like the rest of the prisoners. Now, it's also possible that, Potiphar was the captain of the bodyguard, and these could be the same people. And so Joseph just kind of goes, hey, you can't be in my house anymore, but you're still valuable to me, so I'm going to put you in this other place, the prison, but you're going to be in charge. Regardless of if they were the same people or different, Joseph is elevated to a position of management because of his character and because of his skills that the Lord has given him. And so Joseph, being in charge of the jail, when these two high-profile, influential officials from Pharaoh's court come in, Joseph's put in charge of them. He was put in charge of everybody, but it seems that he was put to give special attention to these two individuals, the chief baker and the cupbearer. And we don't learn why they went to jail. We don't know how long ultimately they were in jail, but it is important to note that these two men were very close to Pharaoh. They both were very close to him because of their role in his food, what he would eat. You have the chief cupbearer, whose job was not just to hold a cup, right? He held the cup. So what is in a cup? Like, what do you have? Drink. Something to drink. What can you do to someone's drink if you don't like them? Why would you That's the first thing he thinks of, is that, like, I would poison someone's drink if I didn't like them. Well, maybe not today, but yes, back then, if you wanted to kill an elected leader, not an elected leader, just a leader, you could poison their drink. So the cupbearer's job was to keep that drink secure, and if anything was suspected to have happened to it, well, who do you think the first person to take a sip out of the cup was? You think Pharaoh tried it out? No, the cupbearer did. So the cupbearer, people think that it was the cupbearer's job to drink the drink before Pharaoh did, but no, it's his job to keep it secure, so no one else does any funny business with it. And then you have the baker, and the chief baker is baking all the bread, right? Maybe the other way you do it is like you grind up some stuff and put it in the bread, and instead of flour, it's something that kills the guy. Well, okay, so you have to trust the people making Pharaoh's food. And in his duties, he comes to these men, and they have dreams. So these men are in prison, and they have dreams. So let's now read about these dreams these two men have. Joseph comes up to them, verse 6, in the morning and observe them, and they were dejected. Dejected means like they were very unhappy. They were kind of like very somber, looked sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Then they said to him, "We have had a dream, and there's no one to interpret it." Then Joseph said, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." And then they go on to give the dream. So the cupbearer goes first. The chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were these three branches. And as it was budding, the blossoms came out, and the clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. So I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup. And I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, "This is my interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land, out of the Hebrews, and even here I've done nothing wrong that they should put me into the dungeon." When the chief cupbearer saw, or chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, "I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were three baskets of white bread on my head. And in the top basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Then Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you, and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off of you." Thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to the dream. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So here we have these two dreams, and I'm sure you're very familiar with them. This is a story that is told often. It's probably the most produced Old Testament story. And so Joseph has these two men come to him, and they are sad. We learned they're sad because they had a dream. Have you ever woke up and maybe you had a terrible nightmare and you feel kind of weird? That happens to me sometimes, where you wake up and you have a dream and you're like, that was kind of real, or it was like too real for me. It involved someone I cared about, and it's not like you thought it was real and so you're mad at them, but it kind of like sticks with you. Well, this in their culture stuck with them because they put a lot of emphasis on dreams. They believed that dreams could tell the future. And so this was not like a normal dream that they had where they felt like, oh, it's just whatever. This dream felt like it had meaning. And they were sad, one, because it seemed serious, and two, because there was no one there to interpret them. Remember, they were in Pharaoh's court, so they would have been around people that could have interpreted these dreams. And so when they tell Joseph, hey, like, well, we're sad because we have these dreams and no one can interpret them. Well, lucky them, Joseph serves the God of dreams who can interpret them. And that's what Joseph says. He says, well, interpretations belong to God. Like, let's check in with him. And so then Joseph goes about hearing their dreams, and he gives them an interpretation. And the cupbearer went first, and in the cupbearer's dream, and it seems positive, too, if you just listen to them, you're like, okay, clearly you had a better dream than the other guy. So there's some grape clusters, and they're growing. They go from buds, and they go to full grapes, and he squeezes them into the cup. Then he hands them to Pharaoh at the end of his dream. And when Joseph hears this dream, remember, it's not Joseph interpreting it. It's not his best ideas. He's not guessing. God tells Joseph exactly what this dream means. And that's why he said, do not interpretations belong to God. He's not telling these folks, listen, like, I got this figured out. Tell me your dreams. Like, this is actually a special skill of mine. He says, no, dreams belong to God. Let's let God do his work. And so when Joseph interprets this dream, he says, listen, this is what's going to happen. These clusters are 3 days. And 3 days from right now, you are going to leave here. You're going to go back, and you're going to serve Pharaoh just like you have been, like nothing ever happened. This is just a little blip on the radar for you. We'll go back. Okay. Well, I mean, if you and a friend both have something happen to you or you need help, and your friend, you're the first friend that goes, they get a good answer, you're like, you're kind of excited to tell your story too, right? Because like, he got a favorable answer, like, I'm going to get one too. So then the chief baker, well, he says, well, here's my dream. And in his dream, I mean, if I had this dream, I would not assume anything good is going to happen to it. So he's got, like, basket on your head, and, like, the birds are attacking him, and it reminds me of this old movie called The Birds, where you go outside, and the birds are, like, attacking and trying to kill you. I would not assume something good is going to come out of that, and that is exactly the case when God gives Joseph the interpretation of this dream. He says, listen, I know we had some good news for your friend, the cupbearer here, but I'm sorry, Mr. Chief Baker, your head's going to be lifted up too, but it's going to be lifted off. You're going to get hung on a tree, and those birds that were eating the bread, they're actually going to eat your flesh. Probably not a fun interpretation for Joseph to give, even more not exciting interpretation to get. But now you're kind of hoping, okay, maybe this Hebrew kid that's just in here, maybe he's just playing some parlor tricks, because he's not a magician of Egypt. He's not one of our folks. Maybe he doesn't quite have it right. But 3 days pass, and what happens? It's Pharaoh's birthday, and for his birthday, he says, you know what? I need a glass of wine. But apparently someone else baked the cake. So the cupbearer goes back to his job, and the chief baker is executed. And Joseph's interpretations of those dreams that God had given him were true. And this is no surprise to us, because we know that God is not a liar. God never reveals anything that is not true. But it is a continued testimony to Joseph in this, that God is with him throughout this entire series of trials in his life. But there was a detail that we passed by in verses 14 and 15, that we need to go back to. Because when Joseph gave the cupbearer a favorable interpretation, where he said that you will go back to your job, and his job was in close proximity to Pharaoh, the most powerful man, not just in Egypt, but the whole world at that time, he asked him, he said, only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. Joseph was in charge. He was like the best possible situation for a prisoner. But he says, listen, I'm not in here because I've done anything evil. I was kidnapped from my land in Canaan. And then I came here. I didn't do anything wrong. And I should not be in this jail. So please, when you go back to Pharaoh, tell him. Now, he's not just wanting him to tell Pharaoh because, like, oh, Pharaoh's going to care about this Hebrew kid that was, you know, kidnapped. Like, Pharaoh doesn't care. But he says this because, hey, you're going to get out of here, and you're going to know it's because of this dream interpretation. Joseph's got to be like, Pharaoh's probably interested in this. So mention me. But sadly, we see in verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So Joseph helps this man, and chapter 40 comes to a close with Joseph in prison. So we have dreams in the pit. Now, chapter 41, we have dreams in the palace. People are still having dreams, which is good for Joseph. Chapter 41 starts, now it happened at the end of two full years that Pharaoh had a dream. So not only did the chief cupbearer forget Joseph, but our friend Joseph has been stuck in prison for two more years. Could you imagine that? Just imagine for a moment, this cupbearer gets out, Pharaoh's birthday, and you're expecting, like, maybe later today, I'll get out. And then night comes, and you go to bed, and you're like, I guess it was Pharaoh's birthday, so maybe the cupbearer, maybe he's just going to wait till tomorrow, because it's probably rude to ask Pharaoh for a favor on his birthday. Also, he just killed someone, so maybe I'm going to, like, let this settle down. Maybe I'll give Pharaoh a week, because I don't want to get caught up in any of this. I'm just a foreigner. A week goes by, a month, 6 months, two full years. Joseph is in prison. He's in his managerial role, but this man has forgotten Joseph. But there's someone who hasn't forgotten Joseph, and that's the Lord. See, Joseph has had a dream, and it has not come to pass yet, and Joseph trusts God. So perhaps this is his moment. Two full years later, more dreams in the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh has two dreams in one night, in quick succession, and he has dreams about cows and dreams about corn. So Pharaoh, like, it's like, picture like if he was in like Iowa, that's what you would dream about. If you're like in the, or maybe like Nebraska, that would be in the United States. Like, he's dreaming about livestock and agriculture. And his first dream is found in verses 2-4. It says, he was standing by the Nile, and lo, from the Nile there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then, behold, seven other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile, and the ugly cows ate up the seven sleek and fat cows. And then Pharaoh awoke. I would wake up too. It's a terrifying dream. Cows don't eat cows. They're not cannibals. So that's kind of, but then he's like, what's going on? Like, this is a very strange dream. So, but he's tired in the middle of the night, so he goes back to bed. And then in verse 5, he's got another dream. He's got a sequel. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, seven ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, seven ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up the seven plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Verse 8. Now in the morning, his spirit was troubled, so he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told him his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. You see, Pharaoh woke up, and he was really concerned because he had two dreams. He's a smart man, so he's probably noticing some similarities. He also is smart that he's not having, I don't think Pharaoh's like over-concerned about dreams, where he's like waking up troubled every single day. You know, he has a bad dream and he's calling everyone in. But something is troubling him in his spirit, that there is something he needs to understand with these dreams. And in Egypt, dreams were a huge deal. They were massive. There was Egyptian magicians and philosophers compiled books called dream oracles with just standard interpretations. People do this today now too, although now you can just ask ChatGPT, what did my dream mean, and it'll probably tell you. And if you say you don't like it, it'll probably give you a new interpretation, because that's how AI works. But these guys come in, and there's like no standard answers, right? They're going through the books, and they're like, seven cows, corn, things getting destroyed, we can't do that. And these orders of professionals whose job it was to analyze dreams, they couldn't figure it out. Notice that they were called, in verse 8, he called in for all the magicians of Egypt. Where else in the Bible have we heard about the magicians of Egypt? Moses. That's right. And what did, so these magicians, like, were they're some interesting people. What did they do when Moses met up with Pharaoh and then that Pharaoh called in some magicians? Were they just like normal guys? Yeah, well, they didn't try. Did they actually copy or seem to copy some of the things that God did? Yeah, so like they, like the staff thing with the snake, they're like, we can do that. Like, we got a snake, and they did that. And they copied a couple of the plagues. Now, were they actually doing them, or did they probably just seem? They're probably really magicians, and they were tricking people's minds and being sneaky. But these magicians were very revered in the nation of Egypt, and so Pharaoh calls these same people in 400 years earlier. They existed, and they were smart men. They weren't fools, but they couldn't find an answer, okay? So then we see in verse 9, someone's memory, the light clicks back on. He's like, oh, shoot, I forgot this guy. So we're going to see what happens next. Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, and he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was in there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dreams. And here's the punchline, verse 13. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, but he hanged him, the cupbearer, or the baker, sorry. So in this passage, we see that as the cupbearer is witnessing this again, this is how close he was to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh is, he's woken up, he's getting his, probably a cup of orange juice brought by the cupbearer, and he is sitting there, and he's got the magicians coming in. So the cupbearer is witnessing all of these things. These magicians come in, and they can't help Pharaoh. And then he's probably feeling a little hot, a little sweaty as this goes out, because he's like thinking about, like, oh, man, I had a dream one time. I understand how stressful this would be. I was in jail. This, oh, jail. Oh, the guy that was in charge, Joseph, that asked me to help him, and then I forgot about him for 2 whole years. So he talks to Pharaoh, and he says, listen, so I met this guy. He's this Hebrew guy. I was in jail, though, so I'm sorry I'm bringing this up. You sent me to jail 2 years ago. Let's not do that again. But there was this guy there, and he helped. And so Pharaoh's got some hope because he is not out of luck. There's someone else that might be able to help him. And so they call for Joseph. Look at verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they had hurriedly, quickly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Pharaoh says, kid, I heard you can figure this out. Now, Joseph's not really a kid anymore. He's probably like 30 or 32. He's been away from Canaan for a while when he was taken at 17, right? He was with Potiphar for a while, and he's been in the dungeon for a long time. But this young man, Pharaoh, thinks he can help, and he says, hey, this is your shot. I have a dream. I heard you can figure it out. What do you got for me? And notice Joseph's response. In verse 16, Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. Stop there for a second. You've been in prison for a while, and then 2 years after you helped someone out, and Pharaoh says, you can help me. And you're, for the first thing you say to this guy, well, I can't help you. I wouldn't have probably started out that way. I probably was like, yeah, I got this. Or yeah, let's figure it out. But he starts out saying, it is not in me, but. It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Joseph says, I actually am no use to you at all, sir. I can do nothing for you. But I serve someone who will give you a favorable answer. Who will give you the meaning behind this dream? And so what then happens, and we're not going to go through this again, Pharaoh tells Joseph his dreams again, and Joseph listens. What I think is interesting, though, is just stop on that moment for a second. Just imagine that you were asked by someone very important, like the youth pastor, to help. And he was like, "Hey, can you help me? Can you help me set up for this football game?" And you're like, "Yeah, I'm actually an expert football field setter-upper," which is great because Justin's very particular about how the football fields are set up, so it has to be done very perfect. But think about it for yourself that you all have skills. And you all do them at different times, whether your skills are music or art or sports. You're just very smart. You're good at solving problems. You're creative. Some of you may have immense talent now. You might be one of the best in your class or your family or this youth group at what you do. Or more likely, you're going to develop that in the future. You're going to end up being one of the best in your field, and you're going to become very financially successful or raised up in a corporation, or you're going to start your own business. And people are going to say, "How did you do it? Like, how did you get so good at theater? How did you get so smart that you could build this business that makes tens of millions of dollars a year?" And you're going to be tempted to respond in the first person and talk about how great you are. That's not what Joseph did, though, was it? Joseph, when he was asked to contribute, he didn't say, "Like, of course I can interpret your dream. Like, I'm quite good at it, actually. That guy knows." No, I was at the head of the class, pun not intended in the moment, for saying, like, "I can figure it out." I remember my mom often reminds me, I was in kindergarten or first grade, and I had my hand raised, and I did not get picked. And someone shouted out the answer to whatever the math question was. And then I raised my hand again and I said, "Why didn't you call on me? I knew the right answer. I knew it. Why'd you call on that idiot over there?" You can tell I had a lot of friends when I was in first and second grade. I was very popular. So I was like, "I can figure this out. Why didn't you call on me?" Well, that's what obviously I would have done in this situation. But Joseph, he says, no. "It's not in me. I can't do this for you, but God can." And so Pharaoh continues, and Pharaoh tells Joseph these dreams, and Joseph listens, and God works, and he works in the mind of Joseph and in his spirit, and Joseph is given the ability to understand these dreams. And so in verse 28, now we get to see what they mean. Verse 28, Joseph gives Pharaoh the interpretation. "It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh." Notice how Joseph reemphasizes that he is not figuring this out, that it's God who's doing it. Joseph says in verse 28, "It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about." What an interpretation. You have these two dreams. Joseph says they have the same meaning. It's not like the baker and the cupbearer. They had two different dreams with two different meanings. No, you had two dreams the same night. They mean the same thing. Pharaoh's dream is a 14-year look into the future of Egypt. The healthy cows and the healthy corn are 7 years of abundant harvest. The sickly cows and the nasty, fungusy, gross corn, 7 years of extreme famine. Now, verse 32 is interesting. Because in verse 32, Joseph said, "Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that that matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about." Think back in the story of Joseph. Have there ever been other dreams that were repeated in Joseph's life? Yeah, Joseph had two dreams, didn't he? Yep. I got you. Joseph had two dreams, just like you said. And they weren't exactly the same, but the theme was repeated that there was sun, moon, and stars, and there was also corn again, and there was bowing down. And Joseph had these two dreams, and they were repeated. And so Joseph is saying to Pharaoh here, listen, because these dreams have repeated to you, Pharaoh, it is because it is fixed in time. Josiah pointed out when he taught this to the high school, there's a great insight I had not considered, but Joseph has not forgotten the dreams that he had in Canaan that he told his brothers and his father. I think that's illustrated here because Joseph says the repetition of the dreams means that it's going to happen. This is a maybe. This is a certainty. And Joseph is in himself still certain that what God had promised him through these dreams, what God has foretold, it's going to happen. And so I love how Joseph begins this interpretation, because maybe at this moment, maybe Joseph says that because he understands now, maybe this is when that dream is going to be fulfilled. My dream is going to become a reality. And so he starts and he reemphasizes to him that God is doing this. And though you're a pagan king, God is going to save not just Egypt, but everyone. He's going to say, he's even going to use this dream that Joseph has interpreted to save Israel, which brings us to our next concern. We've done the dreams and Joseph's divine interpretations. Now we're going to see Joseph's perilous promotion. Joseph's perilous promotion. You know, this moment is often talked about as Joseph's payoff moment. You know, he has suffered for over a decade. He's been betrayed, accused, imprisoned. But through all of that, Joseph hasn't been, you know, sad and depressed, kind of kicking himself like, I've done everything right. I've done no wrong to anyone, which isn't true, by the way, because he was not a very nice brother to his siblings. But through it all, he remained faithful to God. He trusted, he resisted temptations when the moment came. He believed in the promises of God, not just to him in those dreams, but the promises that were made to his father and his father's father and to Abraham. And now God is finally going to bring this about. He's finally going to reward him. He's finally going to get that great job. You know, Vodi Bakum said in a sermon that covered this passage, he said, if you were reading Genesis for the first time, when you got to Genesis 41, you don't cheer. You don't look at Joseph and be like, man, this guy made it. Look at what God does for people who follow him. He's in charge now. No, he says, you get on your face and you pray for Joseph. Why? Because Joseph is a child of the promise, and he's a member of God's chosen covenant people. And after years of faithful service to God, he's facing a great temptation. He's facing that power, that wealth that we talked about and through some of those introductory stories, where just regular folks get great power and great wealth and they ruin their lives. And Joseph, he could be tempted to fall into that. And so this perilous promotion starts out with a perceptive plan in verse 33 to 36. He says, now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years and that are coming and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the people of 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Joseph, like on the spot, comes up with this plan. You know, some folks are very great businessmen and everything comes natural to them. And some folks have their best idea in their later years and they start a successful business. But Joseph comes up with a brilliant six-step plan, like on the spot, in response to this dreams. He says, first, you need to find a wise man. Second, you need to place this man as a manager over the crisis. Third, then you don't just need this guy, you need people he manages under him, that there's a structure of good stewards beneath him. Once you have that, you need to apply a 20% tax on all the fruit, food that's grown in the land. You need to gather it, and these people need to gather it and guard the food. And then step six, in 7 years after you have done this, year after year, after this monumental moment of abundance subsides, you'll be able to sell the stored food so that this country won't perish. And in this moment, we get to see why Joseph rose above to lead both in Potiphar's home and in the jail. This guy was smart. God gave him great intelligence and administrative skills, and it was crafted with the gifts God gave him, and a cupbearer's attentions, which now leads us to, after this perceptive plan, it leads to a powerful promotion. A powerful promotion in verse 37. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom this is a divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there's no one as discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. And only in the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over the land of Egypt." Did you hear that? Joseph made it. He was just in the prison hours ago. Now he's the prime minister of Egypt. He's proclaimed to be the smartest man alive. He's in charge of everybody, and they all need to serve him. You might be sitting here, and when you think about the future, and as you get to high school and then even to college, it'll happen more, but many, many, many people dream of power and wealth, but so often when they get those things, it brings them to destruction. You see, power and wealth don't often solve problems. They can create calamities. Think of those examples again that we started with. You know, if you have little, it's hard to create a massive problem. But if you have a lot, you can create a big problem really fast. Joseph is right there. He's in this powerful position. And if he misuses it, it could destroy everything. But he doesn't just get a powerful position. Next, he gets a posh provision. He gets some stuff to go with this great job. Verse 42. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put the gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, "Bow the knee," and he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all of Egypt." So sometimes when you get a great job, you get some really good perks. And Joseph got some nice things to go with his powerful job. He gets a signet ring right off of Pharaoh's hand. And it's not just fancy jewelry. This is sovereign authority. This is literally the seal of approval for the nation of Israel. When Joseph says something, it's like Pharaoh himself is commanding it. It's his stamp of approval. Next, he gets some designer clothes. Now, I've never had a job where I get a nice wardrobe budget, but Joseph does. They get him garments of fine linen. And even to this day, you know, if you buy really nice sheets, do you know where they come from? You know what they're made out of? Egyptian cotton. And Joseph got some nice Egyptian cotton robes to wear over his, and it's got to be better. I mean, prison attire, they weren't wearing orange back then, but probably wasn't very good. It's probably scratchy, but now he has the finest linen in the land. And in addition to that wonderful suit that he's given, he gets some fine jewelry. He gets a gold necklace, just like Daniel got, actually, when he serves the Babylonians. He gets a gold necklace placed around his neck. He's looking good, and he gets a new car. Pharaoh's second chariot probably came with all the options. Camel leather, air suspension, 4 or 5 horsepower, just really strong. Guys, he's made it. He's got everything anyone could ever hope for in their whole life. He's got power. He's got wealth. He's got all of Egypt bowing for him. Think of this. As he rides around, they proclaim, "Bow the knee." Think back to Joseph's dream. which seemed pretty good. Who was going to bow? How many people were bound before Joseph in his dreams? 11, 15 maybe, some brothers, a couple sisters mixed in there maybe that weren't mentioned, his parents. Well, now he's got the whole nation of Egypt. Things are better than God promised him in those dreams. What more could he ask for? Well, next, he gets a pagan name. Verse 45, beginning of that. Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah. He has this power and prestige, but that Hebrew name, that's a problem. It's like wearing the other team's jersey. We can't have that Hebrew name in our court, so we're giving you a new name. It's very common in these cultures to change the names of folks when they come in. We think of Daniel, right? Him and all of his friends, they got brand new names when they went to Babylon. And the marginal note on these names is God speaks, he lives, or MacArthur translates this, the nourisher of two lands, or the living one. Joseph gets this new name. Look at how far he had come from his family. Egypt, his family hated him. Egypt loves him. And there's more. He gets next a priestly wife, verse 45b, the second half of this verse. And Pharaoh gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. So he has power, riches, luxury, and now he gets the girl. And this is probably the girl. She has like all the TikTok followers. She's gorgeous. She's the most eligible woman in all of Egypt because the priest of On, Potipharah, Potipharah is the priest of On, and the priest of On is the most powerful priesthood in all of Egypt. It is the priesthood to the sun god Ra. This guy's in charge, and so it's his daughter. It is the most eligible lady in all of Egypt, and Joseph gets her to be his wife. Joseph's now not simply a political leader. He is at the center of Egypt's elite social class. He knows everyone. He can go anywhere. He would have his wedding in Madison Square Garden. He's set. But young men and women, what more could Joseph ask for? He's badly mistreated, but he's remained faithful, and look at how God blessed him. Like I said before, people talk about Genesis 41, and it's often preached that this is Joseph's payoff moment. It is the pinnacle of his life. And their message is that if you, like Joseph, if you're faithful to God, even through trial, tribulation, temptation, if you're faithful, eventually God will give you this immense blessing. But the story is not about wealth, and it's not about power. Do you remember what Joseph's story is about? Joseph's story is about promise. See, God did not bring Joseph out of Canaan to get rich. He did not bring Joseph out of Canaan to rise to political prominence. God didn't bring Joseph out of Canaan to gain dominion over foreign powers. And God did not bring Joseph out of Canaan to save the Egyptian people. God brought Joseph out of the land of Canaan to deliver Israel, to save Judah, and to pave the way for Jesus Christ, who's the promised seed, who is one day to come and to die for the sins of his people. That's why Joseph is here. It has nothing to do with this immense blessing that Joseph gets right now. It is still tools God has placed in his hand for those purposes. And what's really great about Joseph and why he's such a good example to follow is not because he made it to this point, it's what he does from this point forward, because Joseph knew that, and we have confidence he did, even in this moment, because of what happens at the end of this chapter. Our last subpoint, there are two promising sons, verse 50 through the end of the chapter. Listen to this, listen to what happens. Now, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And he named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And when the seven years of plenty, which had been in the land, came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was famine in all the lands. but all the land of Egypt, there was bread. Last verse of this chapter, the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. There are two promising sons given to Joseph, and we see where his mind is at in this. Again, in his sermon, the rescuer, Vodi Bakum, shared a really profound insight that we know Joseph has not bought in to the wealth of Egypt because of the names of his children. You see, the name Joseph, Zaphnath-Paneah, Joseph, he has a pagan name, but he gives his children Hebrew names. And the meanings of those names are crucial. The firstborn, Manasseh, the name is hard to translate, and it translates, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. Now, has Joseph forgotten his father's household? No, because he just gave his children Hebrew names. I love how Vodi Bakum translates that. He translates the name Manasseh as, I let that stuff go. Everything that happened to him before, the imprisonments, the attempted murder, Joseph's let it go. He's not holding on to it. And the second child, Ephraim, the name is translated, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. You see, Joseph has all this power in the most powerful country on earth, and he calls the nation of Egypt, where he is now second in command over, he calls it the land of his affliction, because Egypt is not what he was made for. Now, God promised his descendants a land, and it's not Egypt, it's Canaan. It's the promised land. And so Joseph remembers God's promises. So just briefly, as points of application for us, how can we take this away and put it into action right now? Just 2 points. Number one, understand this. All your blessings and gifts that you have right now are from God. Joseph recognized that. His managerial abilities were gifts from God. His ability to interpret dreams was a gift from God. His ability to get people together and operate and manage and run a system were gifts from God. And he knew who had called him to those things. So first, all of your blessings and gifts are from God. Second, all of your blessings and gifts are for God. They are from God, and they are for God. See, God sent Joseph through these trials and placed him in this pit and raised him into a place of prominence, not so Joseph could be rich and have a great life and hang out with the Egyptians and yuck it up. No, he put him in that position so he could save the nation of Israel through whom the Messiah would come. I think for us, we ought to consider what God has asked us to do in our own circumstances. I know that's something that's been on my life this last week. We are all in different circumstances. We are there, whether it is a pinnacle or a pit, we are there because God has put us there, and he has work for us to do. And so we should get to it, just like Joseph did. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for this convicting message. So easy for us to look at power and wealth and prominence and desire it, but desire it to use it for our own good. Thank you that first Joseph is an example of what you do to remain faithful to you and your purposes and promises and calling. But second, that through his trials, Joseph remained steadfast and faithful to what you had called him to do. We pray that we would study this, that we would ask ourselves to meditate on the blessings that you have given us, and then meditate on how we can use them for your glory and to make your kingdom known throughout all the earth. For the sake of Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.